Today is August 2nd, 2017, and this is episode number 422 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm also your honeybee. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
My little honeybee.
Yes.
That's so sweet.
Aww. Yes. Yes. Buzz, buzz. 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 That's it. That's if Droopy Dog was a...
If Droopy Dog...
was a honeybee.
That would be more like buzz.
Buzz.
Ooh, I'm a little bee.
We're off to a bad start.
And that's this week's Apple Context.
You always do that. We actually have to talk about the things.
Every week, I'm just trying to save you.
That seems pretty reasonable. All right. Well, should we start off with the conference call stuff? Because yesterday, Apple did that whole earnings report thing.
Sure. We might as well, as long as we're here. Should we start like right at the beginning of the conference call?
Yeah, kind of. I think so. I think it's the thing I want to talk about. Because okay. you guys on Daily Observations, y'all talked about the iPad reversal, right?
We talked about the iPad reversal and Apple's growing services business.
Mm-hmm. Funny enough, the iPad reversal probably ties into our second topic. But let's talk about the first topic first before we get to the second one.
You know, if you're going to be linear, fine, whatever. Let's talk about the first topic first.
Okay. So about a year ago, I noticed this thing. Mm-hmm. Was it a year ago? Was it a little longer than that, maybe?
Let's go with a year.
I think it was longer than that.
All right.
Whatever. But it's that Tim Cook was entering what I called salesman mode during the conference call. He gets real upbeat. And this started when only
he has
when
an emphatic enthusiasm to his voice.
He has an emphatic enthusiasm, really well put. That started when Apple's earnings reports started to not be great. Great for any other company, but just not great for Apple. But like Apple was ceasing to show any real growth, you know, with year over year flat sales, sometimes even year over year, like Apple's first year over year decline. We saw iPad sales stagnating. We saw Mac sales were finally stagnating after years and years and years of year over year growth. And I noticed that Tim Cook was like emphatically enthusiastic. He was very upbeat. And I've been likening it to being in a salesman mode where he's like, boy, we have all these great things going on. But, you know, in reality, again, incredibly good earnings reports for any other company on the planet except Apple. Mm-hmm. And even though I've been calling it salesman mode, I should probably even call it maybe magician mode. Because he's like, look over here.
Misdirection mode.
It's a misdirection mode. Yeah. And it departs from Tim Cook's, it's different from when Tim Cook is speaking passionately, when he starts talking about privacy or diversity or, you know, the importance of what Apple is doing from a technology standpoint. When he starts getting passionate about those things, he's got a delivery. It's a very specific delivery. When he gets angry, he's got another delivery. Mm-hmm. When he's being very deliberate and precise, and he is, you know, very doggedly and methodically walking through something, he's got another mode. And then he's got the salesman mode, which is very different. And the funny thing to me is that we didn't hear salesman mode last quarter, and it returned this quarter.
So we had what amounts to a year of salesman mode, one quarter off and then back again this quarter.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And what is extra interesting about that is I am positive that I heard this, but Apple turned in a pretty good quarter. It wasn't a perfect quarter, but it was definitely a good quarter with a good guidance for the next quarter. Excellent results for this quarter. They beat their own guidance on earnings, and they beat the Wall Street expectations on earnings, which is more important. Mm-hmm. And they came at the high end of their own guidance for revenues. And iPad sales were up again. Weren't Mac sales up too?
Yes, I believe so. But off the top of my head, I can't tell you how much. iPad, it was 15% year over year.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
Yeah, especially since they've gone, 3 years? Where every quarter
it was down year over year. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's really good news.
Yeah. If you're a shareholder.
If you're a shareholder.
I'm a shareholder.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Tiny shareholder. But, you know, full disclosure, I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah. And not enough that you're going to try and become unethical and sway the market.
No, I wouldn't do that anyway. But
I know, because that's how you are.
That's how I am. So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. And another interesting thing is Tim Cook wasted, 5 minutes recapping everything Apple just announced in June.
It felt like it was a lot longer than that, but it probably was just 5 minutes.
It might not even been that long, to be honest. But we didn't time it. We don't do any research for the show.
No, research gets in the way.
It really does get in the way of a good story sometimes. Here's my problem with that. I 100% of people tuning into that conference call, I'm including Wall Street analysts, I'm including fans, and I'm including investors, and I'm including shareholders.
Mm-hmm. And media.
The difference between shareholders and investors being an investor would be a potential shareholder in this particular case, is the way I meant it. And 100% of the people tuning into that conference call know exactly what Apple announced in June. At the Worldwide Developer Conference. And it was an amazing Worldwide Development Conference. It was an amazing keynote. It was the best keynote in years. Years and years. It was like Apple released as many products or announced as many products at that keynote as it had in the previous 12 months, I think.
Yeah, I was actually a little exhausted after sitting through the keynote.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was wonderful. It was great. So exciting. That Apple has discovered this one weird trick of goosing sales, which is to release new products. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to that. That's topic two. But the thing, I don't understand why he would bother to recap all that stuff when every single person there knows exactly what Apple did. And he didn't shed any new light. There was no new color on anything. There was no, we announced this and this is what it's already doing for us. This was just more like, yeah, this is what we've done lately. Everyone in that call knows that. Everyone knows that stuff.
So everyone paying attention to the call.
Yeah, who is he doing? Why do that? I mean, like Tim Cook's time per minute is probably worth millions of dollars to Apple at this point. If you look at how much money, actually we could do some math on this, right?
We probably could. We probably would have if we had prepared.
Is it 8.2 billion dollars? How many? Let's see. How many minutes? Let's actually just assume he works 24 hours a day, which he does not. So times 60 minutes. So that's 1,440 minutes in a day. 8.2 million billion. Divided by, so let's just call it 92 days in the quarter. Mm-hmm. That is, Apple is earning $89.1 million per day.
That's insane. That's more than a lot of companies make in a year. It's more than they're doing in a day.
It's more than every company makes in, you know, like all but like, you know, 500 to 1,000 companies at the most earn in a day, in a year. So divided by 1440. So his time. Oh, okay. All right. His time, if he works 24 hours a day, his time is worth $61,900 in profit. A minute.
Okay.
All right. I have no idea if any of that math was right, by the way.
We're going to go with it because it allows me to say, you realize that his value to Apple per minute is higher than many people make in a year.
Yes. Yes. And so why waste 3 to 5 minutes recapping stuff that everybody already knows? I found that baffling. I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm not saying that it's even necessarily wrong. I just don't understand it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah. It seems like a waste of his time.
Yeah, it seems like a waste of all of our time. I mean, you know, someone put that together for him. So, right. I doubt that he wrote that. I mean, that would be crazy if he was actually spending his time writing things like that. Although he could, he could, but I would assume that he has an excellent staff that, you know, that prepares that stuff for him that he then goes over.
So I don't know. He talked for 5 minutes.
I don't understand why.
$310,000.
Yeah. Recapping stuff that everybody already knows.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's just weird. I don't get it. It's weird. There's missing information. I don't understand why he felt the need to do that.
You know,
I mean, like, why not say that, you know, in June, we announced more products than we had in the previous year, or we announced more products than we've announced in any keynote since blah, 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 maybe even ever. I don't know. It's just weird.
You know, I can see doing the whole recap thing at the beginning of a general product announcement keynote, because you have general media there along with the tech media and the Apple Focus media. So you need to make sure that these people that aren't typically writing about Apple have all this background stuff. So you take the first 3 or 5 minutes and you cater to that part of the crowd, and then you move on with everything because everyone's up to speed. But at an event like this, it didn't make sense.
Yeah, did not make so, it just didn't make sense.
So why was he in salesman speak mode?
Yeah, well, this is where I'm going to bring it back to something you said when we were quote unquote prepping our show. And I don't want to steal your thunder. So why don't you lay this, your theory out on us?
All right. So, and just so you know, I wasn't trying to set you up to ask me that.
I didn't actually think you were. But this, the first thing I thought about was the theory that's when we decided to talk about this is when you made that.
All right. So here's my hypothesis. And it's that, he wasn't in defensive mode. It's just that this is a byproduct of the presentation training that he's probably been going through.
So your supposition is that he has been getting training on how to be a better public speaker.
Yep.
Because he's not necessarily a good public speaker.
Yeah, if you look at the public speaking he did when he first really started doing this, and compare it to now, and then if you look at the way he was speaking when he first started doing the earnings report calls, and the way he's been doing it like over the past year, really, it's very different.
And it is different. He has improved. He has improved, right? And it's possible he's just improved by doing. And then reviewing what he's doing, you know, just self-training. But it seems a lot more likely that someone with the resources of Apple CEO, mm-hmm. let alone his personal wealth, Train, say hello, by the way.
Yeah, hi, Train.
whether that he would hire somebody to help. You know what I love, by the way? I love it when they do that here at 11 at night. And but they'll do it like I don't know, like a dozen times.
You know, there's someone sitting in the cab of the train, and he turns to the other guy and he's like, "Okay, it's 11:35 at night. Okay, this is funny. Watch. These are the places where the lights are going to turn on." And he starts laying on the horn.
That's probably true. Anyway, so yeah, you would assume that someone like Tim Cook would hire somebody to help him with these things, because, you know, he doesn't want to become too polished either.
Right. Yeah. And this is where training with a professional really helps, because yeah, you learn the public speaking skills that you need, the presentation skills that you need, and you learn how to incorporate that with your personality so that you still have that approachable, natural feel.
Right. Right. Tim doesn't want to become Steve Jobs on stage simply because that would bother too many people.
Right. And he certainly doesn't want to be Gil Emilio on stage either.
Right. And really what he needs to be is the best Tim Cook that he can be.
Right. And that's why I think that Apple hired a professional coach to work with him.
Yeah.
And not like a detrimental thing, but like, we need to invest in this because this is the public face of the company.
Right. And because of Steve Jobs's keynotes, this is a thing in Silicon Valley. Lots of CEOs are learning how to do keynotes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this Tim Cook would not be the only tech exec to be learning how to better present. And we've seen a lot of that, but the reality is that he's still not a natural speaker. Like, you know, to me, do you remember that time when and we mentioned this before, we've actually talked about it at length, but it was the shareholder meeting where the right wing advocacy group was trying to get Apple basically to stop being in paying attention to the environment.
Yes, and you were the only person at the shareholder meeting that caught the change in Tim.
Yeah, it was just you know, remarkable and specific and very. So very
tell me the story, Brian.
I will do that.
Okay,
I will do that for you.
Awesome.
Tim became angry, and he started speaking very passionately, basically saying, "Well, we're going to do this, and if you don't like the fact that we're doing this, I suggest that you go and invest elsewhere." And it was what was the name of that group? Right wing
Enviro Jerks, something like that.
Think Tank Apple. There we go.
You found it?
I did, as a matter of fact. Oh, this nice. Didn't include images. How funny. National Center for Public Policy Research. I call them our right wing think tank. I don't know what they call themselves. I don't really care. I think they're an awful, awful organization. And he got super, super angry. And it was very obvious to me. I'm a big fan of body English. I'm a big fan of micro expressions. I pay attention to this stuff. I noticed that a lot of people didn't. A lot of people actually think I was making it up. I don't really care. And Tim is a really compelling speaker when he's angry, and he's a semi compelling speaker when he's passionate. Mm-hmm. But when he's faking it, when he's not passionate or angry, he's still not a good speaker. Mm-hmm. That was my point. That was my incredibly belabored point.
Well, cool story, bro. No, it was a good story, and I loved that you have the observation skills where you could pick up on things like that where other people weren't. And
I love subtleties, and subtleties matter. And mm-hmm. when it comes to someone like Tim Cook, subtleties really matter. So there you have it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've already done the spoiler on our second topic.
Yeah, I have. The second topic would be Luca Maestri, who is Apple's CFO, the chief financial officer, openly acknowledged the one weird trick for goosing sales.
Wait, Brian, what's the one weird trick for goosing sales?
Release new products.
No.
Yeah, right? Apple figured this out with the iMac, or was it the MacBook Pro? It was the MacBook Pro last year.
Yeah, the Touch Bar MacBook Pro.
The Touch Bar MacBook Pro. Apple announced it, and boom. Mac sales went up. Who knew? Right? It had been almost 2 years since Apple had updated the MacBook Pro at that point. And I started at that point, I started calling it that one, you know, I'm channeling the you know, clickbaity title, you know, just the one weird trick for reducing or lowering your insurance costs, right? Yeah. That one, or doing some health thing, you know, losing weight.
And the crappy thing is that doesn't have to be a clickbait headline, because there might be just the one weird thing that you can do that makes it so that you have cheap car insurance for the rest of your life.
Right. But in reality, it's not.
Right. So anyhow, rabbit hole.
So I started calling that Apple's one weird trick for increasing sales, which was to release new products, because, you know, release new products. Which Apple did in June.
Right. So, yes, so we get the new MacBook Pro in, was it October?
Yeah, I think it was September or October. I forget now.
Let's go with October.
We don't do research here.
And, but I'm going to say it with conviction. So it was in October. And yeah, then we get an upgrade for that at WWDC. We get the 10.5-inch iPad
after
Pro.
After only 9 months.
Yeah.
That was exciting. That was so exciting. I'm still delighted by that.
Did I tell you my hypothesis for why it was so close together for the MacBook Pros?
No, Jeff. Tell us.
Well, Brian, it's because of the Kaby Lake processor. Apple couldn't get the quantity that they needed when they wanted it for the new MacBook Pro, but they knew they really, really needed to get a computer out there. So they went ahead and released what they gave us initially, which had a Skylake processor, which was still a big improvement over the processor that they were using before, which is Haswell. And then when they could get the Kaby Lake processors, then they revved the product line again and released the computer that they had wanted to ship last October.
It's good. Let's go with it. I like it.
I said it with conviction. So
you did say it with conviction, so I believe it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's all that really matters.
That's all that really matters, yeah. And what Luca Maestri said during the conference call was this, and I quote, "We've got a lot of momentum on iPad and Mac because we refreshed the lineups of those products." And it still befuddles me how and why Apple went so long without releasing new products, right? You know, 14, they shipped 14 new products in 2016, and in nine months from October to June, they had announced three new products. And that actually, they shipped three new products, including the one that had actually been announced in September. Yeah. Which was AirPods.
Which are still in short supply.
Which are still in short supply, but that's also a rabbit hole. So I guess really, rather than being sort of like about this, I should instead be.
Do you have a gasket failing?
Yeah. Yes, I do. When it comes to new products at Apple, I do. Instead, I should be really hopeful that this truly does represent Apple's leadership realizing that they had dropped the ball, that they had taken their eye off of iterating their existing product lines. and started, they were focusing too much on the big picture stuff that's coming and hadn't spent enough time on making sure that the existing product lines were iterated and that they realized that that was a mistake that they can no longer make. And that Luca Maestri's statement there. So first of all, I think that the WWDC keynote was possible evidence to support this idea. And then Luca Maestri's statement here may be possible additional evidence.
Yeah, it's...
You see what I'm saying? Am I making too much of this?
I don't think you're making too much of it. The thing for me is, what's the reasoning behind what brought us to where we are right now? Where this is something we actually have to discuss. I mean, what did Apple really lose focus, at least on these products? Or was there something else happening? And if there's something else happening, Apple's a big enough company. Why couldn't they have figured out a way to overcome whatever that problem was earlier?
Well, even Apple has to learn from its mistakes, though.
Sure. But you'd think something like, wow, we haven't updated this computer in 18 months, in 2 years. So maybe...
And Mac Mini recently turned 1,000 days old.
Yeah, no changes at all. And, you know, why? It wouldn't be a big deal just to say, okay, well, there's a newer version of a processor that isn't going to cost us anymore. Let's go ahead and just pop that in. And
now you have processor upgrade. Let's change the ports. Let's change the video cards. Video cards are updated all the time. You know what? Here's a way to think about it. Crappy ass companies like HP can release new products all the time. Crappy ass companies like Dell release new products all the time. Right? Crappy ass PC companies all over the place release new products all the time. So why can't Apple? And of course, we have evidence that this is changing, right? We have legitimate evidence that this is happening. We've got the iMac Pro, we've got the updated iMacs, we've got the Mac Pro that's still in development that they told us about. We've got the MacBook Pros that were updated. At this point, the MacBook
Air was updated.
The Air was sort of updated. The biggest thing that hasn't been updated in the Mac line is the Mac Mini. We have new iPads and, you know, LOL, funny enough, got increased sales. So we have evidence that this is changing and that Apple has realized its mistake with iterating its existing product lines and that that's going to be a much better thing for us, in the future. And, I can, you know, only hope that that remains the case.
So what do you think the likelihood is that Apple will continue with this new product momentum that we saw first at WWDC?
Here's what I think, Jeff. I think that the proof is in the pudding. So Apple has lost its right for us to have give it the benefit of the doubt. So I want to see the proof, but I think that there is a good chance that we will see that proof.
I hope we do. And it's not me just feeling like I'm owed a brand new computer every year and a half or, you know, nothing like that. It's that I like to see the momentum because that keeps interest in Apple's products, which leads to more sales, which is good for everyone.
Yeah, it's good for the community too. I mean, right? You know, the community has lost a lot of excitement and passion about Apple over the last couple of years, in part because Apple has released so few products. There's nothing to get people really going. And hopefully we're seeing that change even as we speak. We like being excited about Apple.
Yeah, it's more fun to write about Apple doing cool things than write about Apple not doing things.
Yes. Yes, it is. In a nutshell.
Yeah. We've done amazingly well with not going down rabbit holes today.
Really? Have we?
Yeah. Go back and listen to some of our shows. We've done really well so far.
Yay.
I mean, think about it. How far down a rabbit hole have we gone about Doctor Who and TARDIS? Or maybe explaining holodecks.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. I guess if you want to, yeah, all right, let's go with that.
Yeah, the irony is I'm kind of taking us down a rabbit hole about not going down rabbit holes.
Oh, I knew what you were doing. I was trying not to encourage you, though.
Well, you're going to have to try harder. Anyhow. All right. So, Apple cars?
What's our time? Where are we?
We're at 30 minutes.
Well, okay. Well, because I do still have something to say on this.
Well, then keep talking by all means.
And I think we've alluded to this on other shows, but you asked why did we get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a worthwhile discussion because I believe that we got to this point because Apple started focusing on all the big picture stuff. That, you know, the things like the non-invasive glucose monitoring, things mm-hmm. like self-driving autonomous ride-sharing vehicles,
artificial intelligence,
AR,
mm-hmm.
machine learning, you know, all this, the big stuff in Siri that they're working on. I believe that Apple's very tiny, tiny executive team. Apple's executive team. It's very important to remember that Apple itself is a fraction of the size of almost every company that is much, much bigger, that is much smaller than it is in terms of sales, in terms of revenues. Apple is a tiny company.
Wait, that came out kind of convoluted for me. So let me make sure I've got this right. What you're saying is that the staff that Apple has, their executive staff, compared to other companies making similar amounts of money, is surprisingly small.
Yeah, no one makes similar amounts of money. Well, I don't know, actually, there are four banks that in China that make almost as much money as Apple. But companies that are smaller than Apple have much larger teams than Apple does. That's a much more succinct way of putting it.
Okay. So then that, to a degree, explains to me why they can have like major product lines that fall to the wayside. It's because they're focusing on something else. If it was a bigger company, you'd have the staff in place so that you could have people running all of these product lines and then reporting to the higher ups.
Yeah, you'd have B team people on iterating the existing product lines. And Apple doesn't really do B team people.
Yeah, okay.
So Apple has had this A team. And Apple has slightly grown its leadership. If you look at the leadership page that you can find at the bottom of apple.com, you'll find more executives there than there were, say, 6 or 7 years ago. Even still, there are the number of top executives that companies that are a lot smaller than Apple have. And again, I know that's convoluted, but whatever, deal with it, parse it.
That's right. I already parsed it for everyone earlier, and then you parsed what I parsed. So we're okay.
Well, we have parsed the parsing. So when you're set up that way, if anything doesn't get attention, nothing happens. And the same thing is true with your engineering team, right? I mean, for a long time. It was the same engineers that were working on OS X and iOS.
Well, that's true. They had the same team. They would say, remember, this is what you're working on now.
And remember now when Steve told us, Steve Jobs said that I think OS X was going to be delayed because they had to pull everybody in to have them working on iOS.
Mm-hmm.
It's because Apple runs so lean. It was part of Steve Jobs' management philosophy. You keep small teams so that everybody is nimble and you don't overload yourself with middle management. And I'm not saying that Apple is perfect by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, that imperfectness was reflected in this, you know, 2 year period where Apple really wasn't doing much new. Wasn't releasing many new things. Mm-hmm. And it's because they were focused on all these big picture things, these, you know, the car, AR, non-invasive glucose monitoring, and what's the other one? And then all the machine learning series stuff that they've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the top management has been focused. And so what happened is that the existing product lines just weren't getting the love. And now I think that they are getting the love. And the question is, you know, how is Apple doing that? Is Apple actually empowering more people to make decisions below the executive management team? I hope that that's the case, because I think Apple has to do that to continue growing while still maintaining their existing product lines. Mm-hmm.
That would make sense. Now, do you think this whole thing with the Spaceship Campus pulled the focus away from shipping products too?
Oh yeah, I guess that would be the other major new product that Apple is working on, which has been Apple Park. I mean, we certainly know that Johnny Ive was highly focused on it. Mark Newsom was focused on it too. We don't know how many of other Apple's designers were engaged in, you know, designing those doorknobs and things like that. Now, there are people who get pissy about this. I'm looking at you, John Keat. and I am not pissy about it. I am super excited about Apple Park. I'm super excited about this building being amazeballs. I am super excited about those doorknobs. Can't wait to see those doorknobs. I want to touch those doorknobs. I want to use those doorknobs.
Well, we're going to have to get you inside. So I feel a Mission Impossible break-in. No, excuse me, a Mission Impossible excursion coming up for you. You're going to look awesome in that harness swinging down from the ceiling.
Oh, yes. Awesome is the word. Awesome.
This is going to be great.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Not horrible and worrisome.
the image I have now is I'm up above, you're zipping down, and we're going to stop you right at the doorknob level so you can feel the doorknob, and you're like a little lower.
So let me tell you why I'm excited about this building.
Uh-huh.
Apple, if a tenth of what has been said about this building is true, Apple could revolutionize corporate design. And I'm talking about from the standpoint of the environment. I'm talking from the standpoint of collaboration. Listen, one of the things that Apple does, this was something that Steve Jobs figured out about the old AT&T Bell Labs.
Mm-hmm.
Bell Labs, and this is something, by the way, that I learned from Walter Isaacson's The Innovators. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Is that what the book was called?
Maybe. It's
Walter Isaacson.
It sounds right.
Yeah, The Innovators. And that's a book that looked at key disruptions going back to, in technology, going back to Ada Lovelace and the dude. She was the programmer. He was the computer designer.
Oh my God. The funny thing is I had his name on the tip of my tongue right until Babbage.
Babbage. Thank you. Yeah. Charles Babbage.
There we go.
Right. Going back to those two, he looks at all these key disruptions and first of all, figures out that it was two people more often than not. And then also talks about the role of collaborative, coincidental, Steve Jobs had a word for it. Coincidental meetings. Serendipitous meetings. I don't know. Just like someone running into someone else in the hall or mm-hmm. at a conference somewhere. And, you know, they say something and it sparks another idea in someone else. All of this kind of stuff. Steve Jobs figured out that was part of the magic of Bell Labs, because Bell Labs just coincidentally had engineers, mathematicians, and designers and whatnot all thrown into the same thing. So you had all this confluence of different disciplines constantly rubbing shoulders and interacting with each other. Mm-hmm. Right. So he designed the Pixar headquarters back when he was still at Pixar Next, he had the Pixar quarters, headquarters designed so that people had to come downstairs to use the bathroom, and there were only two staircases, and so people would run into each other all the time. Right? Mm-hmm. Very, very deliberate, very specific. And he wanted Apple Park to do the same thing, where you've got this mix of people throughout the building, and they're going to rub shoulders, and they're going to meet by accident, and you have no idea what's going to come out of that.
Which is great. And clearly that's been effective for a lot of stuff, or at least it seems that's been effective for a lot of stuff that Apple has done.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, okay, here's one thing about that campus, though, that I'm concerned about. I'm wondering how having the big open area where you have tons and tons of developers just together, almost like a cube farm, but it's more like rows of desks stuck together. I'm wondering how productive that's going to be.
Say it again.
Okay. So some of the imagery we've seen from the new campus is showing like a big area where coders are going to be working together. Mm-hmm. And it's not even like cube farms. It's like rows of really long desks. And so you have like four or five developers sitting side by side at this really long desk.
You know what? I would imagine. I'm far from an expert in this area. You know, I learned about this stuff mainly through Walter Isaacson's book, mm-hmm. Which is, by the way, it's. I love Walter Isaacson, and I know that not everybody agrees with me on that, but it's a great book. I strongly recommend it. It's a lot of fantastic history. It's really, really interesting stuff. But I'm not an expert on it. I would imagine that Apple actually has a plan.
Oh, I'm behind sure they it do, of course.
For those desks, and that's the thing, is that I think that this building is going to change a lot of stuff. And Apple, Steve Jobs, his ideas here have already influenced some other big Silicon Valley technology firms that have designed their own headquarters to foster these accidental meetings. Mm-hmm. And that is that's great, but I think that Apple Park is going to take this stuff even further. And I'm just I find it super interesting, and I love the fact that there were contractors who would laugh and say that Apple couldn't do what it wanted to do in terms of tolerances. For instance, that was one of the things, that the tolerance between where the floors met and the walls met. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are people saying you can't do that. And Apple fired them and found contractors that would do it. And I mean, I love that sort of thing. Like there's so much about that building that is going to be so very interesting and could change the way people, companies think about design. Of course, not most companies don't have enough money to do what Apple has done. But I think that that's going to have terrific ripple effects throughout the rest of the economies out there. I mean, like, this is going to, and it's going to end up resulting in better companies and better products for all of us, as at least some of what Apple is doing with Apple Park ripples out through the rest of the world. And that's exciting. That's great.
Yeah. It's going to be a very cool campus, and yeah, I hope that you're right. And this becomes a model for improving workspaces all around the world.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yes, blah, blah, blah. That's my thought.
All right. So apparently you did have something to say about that.
Yeah, apparently I did. We weren't playing that one, though.
No, but that's okay, because that was fun.
Yeah, it's what we do. Right. Third, this fourth topic.
Yeah.
David Jackson wrote us a great email.
Yes.
Now, if we are top men.
Top men.
And we did not actually, we only like sort of like, hey, you want to talk about this? And we're like, yeah, sure, why not? So we I don't know what what aspects of this I should read. So why don't I just start reading some of what he said?
Okay, sounds great.
All right. First of all, David Jackson said to us, I don't think Apple will ever build their own car. He said, I don't think Apple will ever retrofit someone else's car. Instead, he said, I think that Apple will build its software and sensor package and publish it and publish a hardware reference platform that automotive manufacturers can then opt into building a vehicle that meets the requirements of the reference platform. And once accepted by Apple, well, it's a convoluted sentence. Accepted Apple. Anyway, Apple's going to, according to David Jackson, release a hardware reference platform that automakers could follow. And, you know, it obviously it would have Apple's expectations and standards and whatnot.
So then car makers would essentially license the Apple Car platform for their own autonomous vehicles.
Right. In other words, David Jackson thinks that Apple would become the Microsoft of cars.
And when you said that, it was almost like getting hit in the face with a fish, because it was that shocking. And up until you said it that way, it hadn't occurred to me. That's exactly what that would be.
Yeah.
This is completely contrary to the way Apple has operated forever.
Except for when they went into Mac cloning.
Yeah. And yeah, that's true. Okay. So there was the Mac cloning experiment, which did not work out. But other than that, this goes against the way Apple has always operated.
This goes against the way Apple has always operated. And the question is whether or not Apple would do this. I would just right from the beginning argue that if there's a company that can go against the way it's always operated, it would be Apple. Mm-hmm. Thinking differently is part and parcel of Apple. For good or for ill. The question I suppose would be whether or not Apple thought it could make money and whether or not it could improve the ecosystem by becoming the Microsoft of cars. And the thing is though, I don't think it would. Open licensing, or even a hardware reference platform that is more tightly controlled than open licensing. Mm-hmm. Because Microsoft does control who licenses Windows, and it does have expectations and standards that it wants met to be a licensee, and Apple can pull your Windows license
Apple can't do that.
Apple can't do that. Microsoft can do that, though. Could pull your Windows license if you're not meeting the terms of the contract that you have as a licensee. So, I don't know. What do you think? Could Apple start doing those?
I think they could. I'm having a very hard time accepting that they would. Because Apple has always been about... And discounting the cloning experiment, Apple has always been about having complete control over the product. And if you create a reference platform for a car, and all these other car companies are now licensing that, Apple doesn't really have control over the quality of these cars. So I don't know if Apple wants to risk having the reputation that Microsoft sometimes wrongly gets for crappy hardware, because you buy some cheapo PC running Windows and the computer doesn't work well, regardless of the fact that Windows is on there, and you blame Microsoft because Windows must really suck because look how crappy this computer is. And that's an inappropriate leap in some cases.
Yeah,
happening here too.
A lot of why Windows sucks is because it has to so broadly support this huge, massive array of options in terms of both quality and depth of options. Right. That's right. You know, Microsoft Windows has to be this sort of you know, jack of all computers, and you know, it's Microsoft, the Windows has to keep, I don't know why I keep doing that. Windows has to be able to support all this off the shelf componentry that can be plugged in and configured in, you know, in a near effectively infinite number of ways.
Well, okay. So the way I see it is Microsoft has to reach a lowest common denominator, and they say, here's right. the basic for what we can support. Now, if you want to support anything else, you have to build it in yourself, which is why you get all these third-party drivers for all these other products, you know, video cards and expansion cards and you know, whatever it is that you're going to add in. And then you start having stability problems and conflicts, and now you're diving into DLL tables and it's just kind of freaking me out thinking about having to do that sort of stuff.
Right. And this is the flip side of what Jeff and I have always talked about as Apple's strength, which is the whole widget model, where you control the hardware and the software. You can make both better. And we see this every day with Apple products. We see this with iPhone. We see this with Mac when Apple actually releases new ones. We see it with iPad. We see it with Apple Watch. Right, Apple's doing things with Apple Watch no other company on the planet can touch. Can't even touch it. And they're not going to be able to touch it until Apple has moved on to something bigger and better, or smaller and better. So, I mean, so would Apple do this with cars? Would Apple release that control? Now, David Jackson said, in summary, I see the hardware reference architecture as a way for Apple to strike the right balance of maintaining control while allowing it to work with automakers around the earth at scale and meeting the many individual markets that will exist for their service.
That makes sense on some level.
It does in some levels. There's a lot of, there are many aspects to what Microsoft does that make sense.
Sure.
But give me the whole widget model every time. As a matter of fact, when it comes to a car, I'd rather have the whole widget model. I would rather have the hardware, okay, think about that. Particularly when it comes to a car, it's carrying me at a high rate of speed where I could die. You know, it's one thing you got a PC that crashes. You know, maybe even you lose all your work or your family photos. I mean, the tragedies for sure. But, you know, a car can kill you. I would much rather be in a vehicle that, especially if you're talking about an autonomous electric vehicle where software becomes ever more important. I would much rather the hardware and the software be controlled by the same company like it is with Tesla, or like it is, like it could be with an Apple built car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That seems like a reasonable expectation. It's the idea of someone building me a car from off the shelf parts. Considering a car is little more than a controlled explosion.
Well, yeah, but we'd be talking about electric vehicles or not, still not internal combustion engines. And the reality is that I think that, I mean, you know, there certainly is a lot of off the shelf componentry in current cars, but I think that the more, if you look at what Tesla's doing, and I think that Tesla would be closest to what Apple might do with a car than anything else. If you the software becomes ever more important, the more electrified and autonomous your vehicle is. I'd rather that same company control it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I get David's points.
I absolutely get David's point. He makes a very good argument.
And at the same time, I'm hoping he's wrong.
Yeah, I am too. I suspect that he's not. I don't know. I don't know whether or not Apple is still going to make its own car. I don't know that.
See, if Apple doesn't make their own car, and they still want to be in the car space, then the next logical step that I see is a partnership with a specific car maker. And that could be for something like doing autonomous cars with Didi.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to think here. It does seem increasingly likely that if Apple makes a car, that it's going to be an Apple owned and operated ride sharing vehicle. That does seem more and more likely to me. And if not Apple owned and operated, by a company that Apple has a strong ownership claim, like Didi.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm with you. I think this is the path we're headed down. And the alternative to all of these options is there's just no car platform, no car partnership, nothing like that coming from Apple. And everything that they learn from trying to make an autonomous car is going to go back into their artificial intelligence and machine learning systems.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound quite as exciting as having a car. But on the other hand, I would love to be able to speak to Siri the way that I speak with humans and have Siri understand and anticipate just like a human can, or at least very close to the way a human can.
Wait, how do we get on to this?
You're like the worst girlfriend ever. You're never listening.
Well, now how do we get from cars to Siri?
Because I said, if Apple doesn't make a car at all and they don't do anything in the car space, they'll take everything that they have learned from there and dump it back into their artificial intelligence and machine learning platform. And so then this all enhances Siri.
Okay. To your point, I believe that is happening. I think that Apple is definitely linking its machine learning neural net research and implementation. I think Apple is linking all this stuff together.
Yeah. Okay. So it would have been probably better for me to phrase it as that will be the only thing we see out of this if Apple doesn't go down the car path. So it won't be wasted resources. We just may see a car or we may not.
We may see a car or we may not, right?
Yeah, how's that for riding the fence on Apple's autonomous car
program? Yeah, I think you're going to need a proctologist to work on the splinters.
No, I'm always safe.
Yeah, this isn't going anywhere well.
No, but you know, the upside is we're almost out of time.
Yeah, that's true. We should actually probably go.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good plan. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Let's see here. Our content, you know, it was written by the good people at the Mac Observer. That's us as well as some other good folks. Mm-hmm. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Thank you to CashFly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for TMO. And that is all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Buzz.